Greetings, and welcome to the Pieris Pharmaceuticals third quarter 2018 earnings call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Allan Ryan, Chief Financial Officer for Pieris Pharmaceuticals. Thank you. You may begin.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for our third quarter 2018 earnings conference call. On the call today, we have Steve Yoder, our President and CEO, and Lou Matus, SVP and Chief Development Officer, who will be available for Q&A. We announced financial results this morning. You can access the press release on the Investor Relations page of our website at www.pieris.com. Before we begin, I'd like to caution that comments made during this conference call may contain forward-looking statements involving risks and uncertainties regarding the operations and future results of operations of Pieris, including statements related to the timing and progress of our clinical trials and preclinical programs, our partnerships, and our financial position. And actual results or events may differ materially from those expressed or implied by such forward-looking statements. Factors that might cause such differences are described in our filings with the SEC, including our annual, quarterly, and current reports. The information being presented is only accurate as of today, and Pieris undertakes no obligation to update any statements to reflect future events or circumstances. With that, I will hand the call over to Steve.
Thank you, Alan, and thank you to everyone for joining us today for this 2018 third quarter earnings call. I'll begin by giving a brief introduction to Pieris, followed by an update on our clinical and preclinical pipeline. I will then go over some corporate highlights from this past quarter and discuss our plans for next year. As a reminder, we are a clinical stage biotechnology company developing novel anti-kaelin-based therapeutics across multiple indications and are particularly focused on respiratory diseases and oncology. Anti-kaelin proteins, which are proprietary to Pieris, are engineered lipokaelins. And lipokaelins are proteins that are naturally abundant in the body whose function is to bind and transport different molecules. These proteins are small and monovalent, and their distinct size and structure allow us to pursue a variety of treatment options. They also have good drug-like properties, which continue to be demonstrated through clinical data, including data we will be discussing on today's earnings call. We believe that having good drug-like properties is one of the two essential components of developing successful drugs. The other is having biology that is differentiated from other drugs, such as traditional monoclonal antibodies. To that point, we are engineering anticoagulant proteins to be administered through inhalation, an advantage over injectable monoclonal antibodies that informs our entire respiratory pipeline. We are also engineering anticoagulant proteins to drive distinct agonistic activity, a foundation of our bispecific immuno-oncology platform, which focuses on T-cell co-stim agonism. Turning to our core value drivers, our lead respiratory asset, PRS-060, is an inhalable IL-4 receptor alpha antagonist addressing the same target as the FDA-approved dupilumab for the treatment of uncontrolled asthma. This molecule was designed to target a validated pathway in a localized way via inhalation. In addition to being a high-value commercial opportunity, it also serves as proof of concept for the novel delivery potential of our drug class. We are developing PRS-060 in collaboration with AstraZeneca, with retained co-development and co-commercialization rights in the United States. Our lead oncology asset, PRS-343, is a fully proprietary immuno-oncology bispecific drug candidate composed of two anticoagulin proteins targeted 4-1BB that are genetically fused to an antibody targeting HER2. This tetravalent molecule was designed to preferentially activate tumor-specific T cells in the tumor microenvironment through a unique agonistic mode of action, with the objective of providing a larger therapeutic window than that of traditional monoclonal antibodies engaging 4-1BB. I will now give an update on our overall pipeline, beginning with respiratory diseases and followed by immuno-oncology and other programs. Turning to respiratory, we're pleased to announce that PRS-060 was safe and well-tolerated in a single ascending dose phase 1 study in 48 healthy volunteers. The drug candidate was tested at nebulized doses ranging from 0.25 milligrams to 400 milligrams. We are very encouraged by the data from this study, as it's the first time an Anticalin protein has been administered to human subjects via inhaled delivery. We continue to enroll subjects with mild controlled asthma who have elevated levels of fractional exhaled nitric oxide, or FeNO, in a placebo-controlled multiple ascending dose phase 1 study where we are evaluating the safety, tolerability, and PK profile of our drug candidate, along with its capacity to reduce FeNO, which is an established marker of lung inflammation in subjects dosed with PRSO60. We and our partner AstraZeneca expect to report full data from these phase 1 studies at an upcoming medical meeting. After the completion of the phase 1 studies, AstraZeneca will sponsor the phase 2A study, which will focus on moderate to severe asthmatics. Once the phase 2 study is complete, we may exercise our options to co-develop and separately to co-commercialize this program in the United States. PRSO60 is one of five programs we are developing with AstraZeneca as part of a collaboration we signed with the company in 2017, in which we have co-development and co-commercialization options for PRSO60 and two additional programs. Beyond PRSO60, we have initiated discovery efforts for one additional AstraZeneca program earlier this year. We are also actively developing our own proprietary respiratory pipeline outside of the AstraZeneca Alliance, and we initiated discovery efforts on two programs earlier this year. I would now like to provide an update on our immuno-oncology pipeline. We continue to enroll patients in our dose escalation study for PRS-343. We had previously guided initial data release by year-end, and I would like to provide an update on that timing today. We now intend to report initial data for this study in the first half of 2019. Although this represents a shift from our previous timeline, we believe that disclosing data after completing the dose escalation phase, while prioritizing the enrollment of patients across a range of immunotherapy-responsive tumor types, will provide a more complete data set from which to evaluate the drug candidate's potential. As a reminder, the protocol allows for the flexibility to enroll up to 10 patients per cohort, and the company has recently begun screening for the 11th cohort in this study. In August, we initiated a dose escalation trial of PRS-343 in combination with the PD-L1 inhibitor atezolizumab, and we intend to report initial data from this trial also in 2019. Beyond PRS-343, we recently announced another 4-1BB anticalin-based bispecific addition to our pipeline, PRS-344. PRS-344 is a PD-L1 4-1BB antibody anticalin fusion protein that we are developing as part of our immuno-oncology collaboration with Servier. Published preclinical models of anti-PD-1 in combination with anti-4-1BB therapy have demonstrated robust anti-tumor activity, and we are enthusiastic about the prospect of investigating the potential synergistic effects of a bispecific directed to this pair of targets. We will present preclinical data from this program for the first time at the Society for the Immunotherapy of Cancer, SITC, in 2018 annual meeting at the end of this week. We continue to expand our immuno-oncology pipeline beyond this, both proprietary and partnered, within our two IO-focused alliances, Servier and Seattle Genetics. As previously mentioned, we intend to file two INDs next year, one of which will be for a wholly owned program and the other one for one of the partnered programs we are developing within our Servier collaboration. Finally, I would like to discuss PRS-080, which is a potent hepcidin antagonist known as the master negative regulator of iron metabolism. This program is nearing the end of an ongoing phase 2A study in dialysis-dependent patients suffering from functional iron deficient anemia. Due to some technical issues unrelated to the drug product near the end of the trial, we fell behind our intended schedule of enrollment completion by this stage. We plan to enroll one additional patient soon and wanted to use the occasion of this quarterly earnings call to disclose highlights of data generated to date from the trial. The study is evaluating 5 weekly doses of PRS-080 versus placebo at 2 different dose levels, 4 milligrams per kilogram and 8 milligrams per kilogram. To date, the drug appears to be safe and well tolerated at both levels tested, another example of an Anticalin therapy demonstrating a favorable safety profile in the clinic. The drug also was shown to potently inhibit hepcidin, and at both dose levels demonstrated substantial iron mobilization and increased transferrin saturation, similar to what was seen in the phase 1b single-dose study. To date, there has been no conclusive change in hemoglobin at either dose versus placebo. We believe that weekly doses of a hepcidin antagonist may not consistently suppress hepcidin levels to drive a hemoglobin effect due to hepcidin rebound, which may reduce the window of opportunity for the mobilized iron to drive increased hemoglobin levels. We believe more frequent dosing could lead to more consistent hepcidin suppression that could lead to more significant hemoglobin changes versus placebo. We plan to enroll the final patient this year and present the full data set from this trial in 2019. We also plan to share the data set with ASCA Pharmaceuticals, at which point ASCA will decide whether to exercise its right to develop and commercialize PRS-080 in Japan and other Asian territories. Additionally, we plan to share the data set with potential partners outside of ASCA's opt-in territories. Moving beyond the pipeline, we are excited to welcome 2 new members to our board of directors, Dr. Peter Keener and Dr. Matthew Sherman. Dr. Keener has served in multiple executive roles, most recently as the Chief Scientific Officer of Sucampo, and Dr. Sherman, who most recently served as Executive Vice President and the Chief Medical Officer of Acceleron Pharma. This concludes my prepared remarks, and I would now like to hand back over to Alan to guide you through our financial results for the third quarter of 2018.
Thank you, Steve. We recognized revenue of $8.3 million for the quarter ended September 30, 2018, as compared to $3.9 million in revenue in the quarter ended September 30, 2017. This increase in revenue primarily relates to the increased level of activities with respect to our collaborations with both AstraZeneca, which commenced in June 2017, and Seattle Genetics, which commenced in February of 2018. Research and development expenses were $11.4 million for the quarter ended September 30, 2018, as compared to $6.3 million for the quarter a year earlier. This increase in R&D expenses reflects advancement across the pipeline of programs, as well as preparation for an advancement of clinical studies. General and administrative expenses were $4.7 million for the quarter as compared to $2.9 million for the quarter ended September 30th of last year. This increase in G&A expenses reflects higher personnel costs and professional services costs for audit and legal, as well as an increase in G&A costs to support the growing business of our company. The net loss for the quarter was $6.2 million or 11 cents per share compared to $7.1 million or 16 cents per share for the quarter ended September 30th, 2017. Turning to the balance sheet, total cash, cash equivalents, and investments as of the quarter ended September 30th, 2018 totaled $137.3 million as compared to $82.6 million as of December 31st, 2017. This increase was driven primarily by the $47.2 million in net proceeds from the February 2018 equity offering, the $30 million upfront payment received as part of the Seattle Genetics Immuno-Oncology Collaboration, and the $12.5 million milestone payment from AstraZeneca achieved in the fourth quarter of 2017 that was paid in the first quarter of this year. This was offset by $35.7 million of operating cash expenditures during the year. With that, I will turn the call back over to Steve.
Thanks, Alan. In summary, we are focused on developing our clinical assets, both proprietary and collaborative, while continuing to leverage the benefits of having a novel platform. We are pleased with the clinical data from PRS-060. We believe that the PRS-080 clinical data are another example of the good drug-like properties of the Anticalin drug class, and we look forward to sharing PRS-343 data next year once we have a more comprehensive data set to better inform on continued development of that program. Thank you for joining us on the call today. We would now like to open the call for your questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Our first question comes from the line of Umer Raffat with Evercore ISI. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, guys. It's actually John Miller on. I have a couple of questions. Let's start with the PRS 060 data that you say is at an upcoming medical meeting. Is this still a 2018 readout? Are we still expecting this data this year, or is this going to wait till next?
Hi, John. Steve here. We haven't guided specifically on which upcoming medical conference that would be. Given the fact that we like the ability to talk about both the single ascending dose and the multiple ascending dose trials together, we like that opportunity. I think you should be thinking about this as something beyond 2018. And
okay,
as a general
great
reminder, typically there are two prominent respiratory conferences that people use. You have the American Thoracic Society in the spring, and you have the European Respiratory Society in the fall.
Great. Thank you. For PRS 343, seeing the push out on data there, trying to figure out how to interpret that, it seems like you're now going in this 11th cohort to the actual approved Herceptin dose. So have you seen any responses at all at lower doses, and do we have a way to differentiate responses from your molecule relative to the responses that you might expect at the Herceptin dose?
Yeah, look, it's a fair question. I think, as we mentioned, or what we're saying here is we're not going to comment on any trial data thus far. What we have done, I think it's a good practice, is when we set a goal for where we want our drug to deliver, we set qualitative and quantitative PD thresholds to release data prior to completing enrollment in the trial, and we're simply not there yet. I think there are a number of factors that can influence the right dose level, and as you noted, we are screening the 11th cohort, which is a dose in line with where trastuzumab is indicated in a metastatic setting, and we will be able to probe that cohort as well as over-enrolling in that in even prior cohorts.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from line of Chris Shibutani with Cowen and Company. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, this is Pam on for Chris. Can you provide some rationale around your mention in the press release of now focusing on immunotherapy-responsive tumor types in the 343 monotherapy study?
Sure. I think maybe I'll let Lou maybe talk to the clinical trial enrollment strategy.
So we as part of the dose escalation phase, have allowed patients with any particular HER2 tumor type to be enrolled, that we, of course, thought that's the appropriate way to go forward at the outset. And we will continue to do that, but what we're seeking to do is now that we're able to enroll a larger number of patients in each cohort as we go forward, to complete the dose escalation, we can focus on a number of different HER2-positive tumor types that we've been wanting to really explore in detail from the outset, such as, in particular, gastroesophageal cancer and bladder cancer, and to look at a number of patients with those kinds of tumors in the context that PD-1 pathway inhibitors have shown some activity in those tumors, and we would like to explore in more depth as we go forward the activity of the drug on patients with HER2-positive subset, the HER2-positive subset of those tumor types.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And just another quick follow-up from me. Can you comment on how the ultimate distribution of tumor types will look generally? How many patients can we expect in the most prevalent tumor type, for example? Thanks so much.
Sorry, I missed the first one. You said the what something distribution?
Sorry, the ultimate distribution of tumor types in the 343 monotherapy study, given that now you're focusing a little bit more on the immunotherapy responsive tumor types.
So we're not going to comment on the full distributions at this time. I think if we go back to when we disclosed data in June, where we had enrolled approximately 15 or 17 patients, that was broadly distributed across several different HER2-positive tumor types. As we go forward, we will continue to bias, as we said, towards specific tumor types, but we're not going to disclose specifically what those are at the present time.
Thank you very much. Very helpful.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Biren Amin with Jefferies. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. Just maybe to start on 343, how many additional cohorts do you plan on dosing beyond this 11th cohort?
Yeah, let me pass that question over to Lou.
Okay, so as written in the protocol, we initially designed the trial to go up through cohort 11, which is we're now screening patients for that cohort, which would be the highest dose cohort. And we determined that at the outset, if the drug was safe and well tolerated through cohort 11, and factors such as bioavailability at the tumor site, receptor occupancy merited higher doses, we would be prepared to explore it. So I think that that's an optionality that we have, given the behavior of the drug to date, but we would make that decision once we've seen some of the initial activity of the drug in cohorts 10 and 11.
Got it. And then just on the current trial, I mean, you've amended it to include or to enroll patients with immunotherapy responsive tumor types. Are we talking about, patients that have PD-L1 high, or are we talking about, patients where PD-1 inhibitors are more effective? Can you define what this population is?
Yeah, it's because we didn't, we're describing our strategy moving forward. We didn't actually amend the trial, so to speak, in a formal way. So we're not necessarily looking for certain biomarkers as inclusion criteria. Clearly, those are biomarkers that we are measuring as we go forward, most immunotherapy development programs will look at the level of PD-L1 positive tumors confer any advantage in terms of responsiveness. So we're measuring those, but we're not including any biomarkers as inclusion criteria at this time.
Got it. And then are you looking at all at HER2 mutation tumor types in the 343 study?
No, we're only looking at HER2-positive tumors that actually have elevated expression, either by immunohistochemistry or FISH plus immunohistochemistry. And I think that the nature of the drug's mechanism of action actually requires there to be elevated levels of HER2 on the cell surface. That's how the drug works, to cluster the anti-4-1BB anticalins and activate the T cells through cross-linking. The other thing we are doing, of course, is, for validation, is we're collecting longitudinal biopsies where possible so we can retrospectively confirm HER2 status by IHC. We have shown and presented at meetings data that shows that the drug, from the immunologic standpoint, can activate T cell, 4-1BB expressing T cells for tumors that express HER2 at less than 3-plus levels or 2-plus levels. But as far as the criteria for enrollment in this trial were concerned, we restricted the patients to be enrolled to those that have the equivalent of a 3-plus positive HER2 positive tumor. Retrospectively, with the longitudinal biopsies, we'll be able to see exactly what the HER2 status was of the tumor at the time the drug was initially administered to the patient.
Got it. And maybe just one last question on 060 in the mild asthmatic study that's currently ongoing. what type of result would be considered, would be defined as clinically relevant in terms of reduction in FeNO?
Yeah, the amount of FeNO reduction that we require to move forward and consider a positive outcome was actually decided in consultation with AZ, of course. And we used some data from previous studies as benchmarks. The closest study to what we're doing in terms of patient population and looking at FeNO reduction in mild asthmatics came from the UCB Vectura IL-13 single-chain variable fragment study. And they were presented at the American Thoracic Society meeting in May of 2017. So that was one clear benchmark. But we also, of course, looked at FeNO reductions in some of the that were achieved in some of the trials in patients with moderate to severe asthma as well, and have from that overall analysis of the data and of the correlation of FeNO reduction with drug efficacy, we have what we believe is a statistically significant reduction versus placebo that will benchmark whether we move forward. As part of the current multi-ascending dose trial in the mild asthmatics, we're looking at FeNO reduction at multiple dose levels, and from there we'll be able to determine the appropriate dose for the phase 2A study in the severe asthmatics.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you'd like to join the question queue, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Matt Phipps with William Blair. Please proceed with your question.
Thanks, guys. Just first on 060, I'm not sure how much you can say at this point, but can you mention anything about the serum bioavailability between the nebulized and IV formulations and maybe half-life? And then anything from preclinical studies to suggest that a dry powder inhalation might kind of even improve PK and bioavailability above the nebulized formulation?
Yeah, hi, Matt. Steve here. So we're not disclosing any data at the present time on either the single ascending dose or the ongoing multiple ascending dose study. I think what we can say for the nebulized to dry powder formulation nuance is that a lot of this is driven by particle size. And so, I think we have a really good understanding of what particle size that we need to result with to have the drug be deposited in the right part of the airways. And so I think with AstraZeneca's world-class formulation capabilities and based on data that we've generated, which we're not at liberty to disclose today, we're extremely confident that we have the right particle size in the nebulized formulation, and we're very confident that we'll be there for the dry powder, which would be the formulation to go into our phase 2A study.
Thanks. And then, Steve, I'm not sure if I heard you correctly. Did you say that you have pharmacodynamic kind of boundaries or benchmarks set in the 343 trial and you haven't met those yet? Can you clarify what you said there?
Sure. I'm happy to do so. I was saying that what we've done, as we do for all of our programs, we set what does good enough look like in order to declare success, as well as when we want to disclose initial data for a program. And for PRS-343, we set qualitative criteria, meaning how many different types of maybe biomarker readouts would we like to see activity. And then we also set quantitative thresholds that we wanted to achieve prior to disclosing data, whether that was that would be in the context of interim data before completing enrollment. And yeah, we're not there yet. We're not going to comment on the data at this time. We think a more fulsome data set would be the right way to disclose in terms of all these these IO programs that are ongoing right now. And we want to try to respect the benefits of having a more fulsome data set. So correct, we're not there yet on the PD quantitative thresholds to justify coming out with a data set. But we are continuing to enroll. As you saw, we are continuing to escalate, and we continue to generate data from the more recent cohorts,
and we continue to over-enroll within these higher cohorts.
Thanks. And then the last thing, I guess, not sure exactly how to ask, but it seems like obviously you've seen something encouraging to support the IND-enabling studies of additional 4-1BB style bispecifics with this platform, or are maybe some of the other proprietary ones or non-disclosed one you're working on maybe have different mechanisms?
Sure, I think, yes, Matt. So we have not seen any showstoppers for PRS-343. A lot of things need to be considered, as I said, to have a good drug-like properties in the biology. And on the latter part, the biology that will be at stake for PRS-343 is different than the biology at stake for 344, which is the PD-L1, the 4-1BB bispecific, where you have the benefit of a double IO engager on the PD-L1, PD-1 axis disruption, and there's still that localized benefit given where PD-L1 is expressed. So there is significantly nuanced biology between those programs that I think certainly merits a continuation of IND-enabling activities for a number of programs, including PRS-344. But again, I go back to reiterate, the fact that we're not there yet on PRS-343 doesn't mean we won't get there. We've got to just continue to work through escalation and over-enrollment and look at the data as a totality.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you. Our next question is a follow-up from the line of Umer Raffat with Evercore ISI. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my question. John beat me to it on the first time around, so I had a quick follow-up, if I may. I wanted to maybe spend a minute on the Novartis inhaled asthma program, and my questions were twofold. First, so Novartis management claims they've cleared all preclinical tox on their inhaled TSLP program. Is it fair to say that you've also completed a comprehensive preclinical tox on your inhaled IL-4 as well? And secondly, how significant is that competition? It sounds like they're fast-tracking it to phase two, so I just wanted to understand the timelines because this appears to be getting competitive relatively early stage.
So, Omar, maybe I'll take a Steve here. Maybe I'll take a cut at that. I think there's two different aspects to your question. The first considers, the toxin, I guess, on the specific drugs at hand, and then the second one is the overall biology, maybe TSLP biology versus IL-4 receptor alpha. Maybe I can take the first one. Maybe I'll let Lou take the second one. I think we've completed a 4-week tox for our drug PRS-060 that allows us to move through the 1A to 1B and then the phase 2A study. Beyond that, we will then parallel process along with the phase 2A development the longer tox studies that will enable later stage development. I think when you look at the tox data that we have, which we were very encouraged by, when we look at the safety and tolerability data from the phase 1A study, where we say we are safe and well tolerated, and the fact that we continue to escalate in the multiple ascending dose study, and we look at the overall biology of IL-4 receptor alpha antagonism with the significant safety database for dupilumab, we're very encouraged by the tox data we have generated to date, considering the overall biology and the specific drug-like properties of PRS-060. So whether or not I would call that comprehensive tox, I would say we've done absolutely what is needed to do to take the program through phase 2A, and we will be there on any preclinical tox beyond that that's necessary to carry us further development beyond that. And then with respect to TSLP versus IL-4 receptor alpha, I'll let Lou handle that one.
No, obviously TSLP is another quite interesting target for moderate to severe asthma, and we are quite aware of the data. The phase 2 data that were published did potentially show a benefit that was more broadly active irrespective of EO phenotype, but that was from a phase 2 study, and Dupixent looked very similar in that phase 2 study. So we'll see how that, how at least the systemically administered TSLP plays out in phase 3. But, it doesn't mean that it's going to be more effective in the target patient population that we're addressing with 060. I think that, for example, we were Surprised to see that the anti-TSLP antibody was not active in atopic dermatitis, where Dupixent was quite active in atopic dermatitis, and of course is on the market now. A little perplexed because the inflammatory mechanisms at work in dermatitis and in asthma overlap to a significant extent. So we're aware of their data, and we're very bullish on the IL-4 receptor alpha as a target for inhaled delivery.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Yoder, there are no further questions at this time. I'll turn the floor back to you for any final comments.
No, I have no further comments. I just want to thank everyone again for your attention today and for your continued support of Pieris. We look forward to keeping you updated on our progress, and thank you again for joining the call. Have a great day.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.